there's a place that is hidden because they do not pay influencers. They built their social media platform from the ground up for far less than any other, and they adhere to freedom of speech to the core. Oh, they're veterans that do it all for free? Who are they? Seascape, Seascape, Seascape. You can grab your profile on Seascape by downloading the app on your Android and iOS devices. If you'd rather, head to Seascape.com and create your profile from your computer. Stop having forced posts and advertisements in your social media feed while algorithms choose what you get to see. Seascape is where you can choose what and who shows up in your news feed. Say enough is enough. Escape today. Download Seascape on your mobile device or head to Seascape.com now. Seascape.com.
Please remember the views and opinions expressed by this show or any other show on DV Radio and its guests are strictly those of said individuals and do not reflect those of the DV Radio staff nor the staff of Dysfunctional Veterans.
Let's go to war, baby!
All I know is war, all I know is shoot, all I want is more. I'm a soldier, I'm a warrior, got a emblem on my cover, and ask me what I did for ya, I put the trash deep down under. Yeah, I'm a dog of war, hell's what I've been through, I'm a dog of war, I did it all for you, yeah.
This is the War Dog Trail. Welcome back for episode 17. In this episode, we will discuss the rest of my my first tour in Iraq after we crossed the border. We'll go into some highlights on what's going to be happening with the Sergeant's Ops Report, a new newsletter that I've made up that will be available for weekly emailing soon. Again, that's the War Dog Trail as this podcast, and I will soon be sending out a newsletter called the Sergeant's Ops Report. And the Sergeant's Ops Report will have international news that I pull from the State Department's Overseas Security Advisory Council, which happens to be run by their Bureau of Diplomatic Security, DS. And for those of you who know what protection is like in a foreign or hostile area, no one does it better than DS, right? Few do it as well as DS does. Especially when it comes to international liaisons for the U.S. or for Interpol, man. Few rock as hard as diplomatic security. So my hat's off to them, salute. But we will have some of their international news reports from their OSAC reports and the Sergeant's Ops Report newsletter, as well as news on what's going on with Sergeant War Dog TV, the web series, and Camp Doghouse, the war veteran shelter. Now, I also want to add that I now have press credentials, all right? I have press credentials as a reporter, journalist, and photographer from three different accredited agencies. So I will start to now try to get media passes to enter military bases to interview military personnel about what their jobs are like. I want to start a show entitled What's That Military Job, where I interview different active duty personnel on their bases as much as I can, and to try to immerse myself and the Sergeant War Dog TV web series into their lives to show America and to show the world what it is they do to help protect us and keep us doing so well and keeping the country so great. Because outside of, you know, what I do in the infantry, carrying a weapon, walking around with a gun in my hand, there are hundreds of other jobs that truly support our country that you may or may not know about. So I'd like to highlight those. Now I have the media and press credentials to do so. Still going to have to work on actually gaining access to certain bases or trying to acquire media passes to get into certain events now, man, because now we're going to treat this like full-on media production company wherever we can go to record and interview people, we will, because we are now a voice and an outlet from the web series to this podcast to the Sergeant's Playlist. We have, or even the blog. I'm not sure if any of you are aware, but there's a blog by the name of The War Dog Trail that I put out, but its content is completely different from what I drop here on the War Dog Trail podcast. And speaking of which, more good news. Soon, I will be bringing you interviews from Marines that I serve with in the 3rd Battalion, 4th Marines. Marines that have been to Iraq 3 or more times, plus some tours to Afghanistan. I will have raw and uncut war footage interviews with them. Men that I actually know personally, who saved my ass, watched my ass, and whose asses I watched and saved in return. If that's what it came to. All right. So that'll be a new segment that I'm working on. It's going to be called Tales of War with Sergeant War Dog. Within the next 2 weeks, I think we're going to have the first interview locked down so that we can get that part of the content out to you. And most importantly, this podcast will now be syndicated and broadcasted on the DV Radio Network. And for those of you who are not familiar, DV stands for Dysfunctional Veterans. And the DV Radio Network broadcasts live on the Live 365 app. And occasionally you can catch me live on the Saturday nights with their podcast called Barracks Talk, which is on from 9 o'clock to 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It's a great show, great family, great network to be a part of. Everything that you listen to on the DV Radio Network is veteran centered, combat veteran centered, so you know you're in the right place, the right community. All right, all the perspectives you hear are coming from hosts that are veterans, hosts that are combat veterans, hosts that have already been there and done that, but mostly who are on your side, who are just here to relay the information they have and to try to entertain you as much as possible with their shows and podcasts, just like I am, trying to get you to continue to fight, continue to hold on in your life, battling whatever battles you have, whatever demons, whatever nightmares. Try to continue to hold on, struggle on, just as I do. Salute. All right, before we begin with the first part of the remainder of my first tour in Iraq, we're going to open up with the song Slum Life by C. Reese out of Winter Park, Florida, and featuring One Dog, also out of Winter Park, Florida.
Scars are permanent tears. What I know I made my enemies my peers. Felt some way neglected, my path was hectic, soon to be breathless. Yes, that tomb in the graveyard, soon to have my section. I treated my righteous soul equivalent to a necklace. Yes, life is a hell of a thing, but you know what they say. For you to experience the joys of life, you must endure and overcome the pain.
Living that slow life, mobbing on the block every day. People chasing for money, call they need somewhere to stay. Living that slum life, grinding on the block every day. People chasing for money, call they need somewhere to stay. Living that slum life, nigga get shot every day. People chasing for money, call they need somewhere to stay. Living that judge life, he say he won't see another day. People chasing for money, call you need somewhere to stay.
living that slum life. From homicides to incarceration, fuck talking, open up your chest like a hard patient getting carjacked. It'll have your heart racing broad daylight. One slip and get your car taken, posted on the block. For the jewels, keep the heart blazing, posted nonstop. Now it's hot, so the nard chasing, hop out on the block. In a blazer, then you make them tase you. Now you're in the county and you don't know what you're facing. Come on the statement, your homie incriminated by some shit that happened long time ago. Ain't it crazy, I done sit back and seen how green the game make a nigga turn and read his own, and that's when bridges get burned. Real turn fake like internet ice. Looked out for him as a jit, now you looking at life. Then you take it to trial, they tell you to hang it up. Your partner the co-defendant, thinking he give a fuck. Then you get hit with the L, he get hit with some months, and you ain't getting no mail. Nobody hitting you up. Feel like your chick don't care, she only visited once. So you hit her on the cell and here she hitting your bro. She sorry to break the news, but he be making moves, and you ain't coming home. Plus your baby, they need food. Plus she say your cousin Tavis got murked by some Haitians. That's your auntie only son. All she could say was that's my baby. Living that slum life, mobbing on the block every day. Paper chasing for money, call they need somewhere to stay. Living that slum life, grinding on the block every day. Paper chasing for money, call they need somewhere to stay. Living that slum life, nigga get shot every day. Paper chasing for money, call they need somewhere to stay. Living the judge life, he say you won't see another day. Paper chasing for money, cause you need somewhere to stay. Living that slum life. Hey, bro, they see us as the opposition. It ain't the ghetto, we the product of the politicians. The Constitution got some flaws. If it don't, then why they keep changing the laws? Say the land of the free ain't for me and my dogs. They ain't used now a tree, but man, they done hung them all. Telling you what it is, crackers giving our bid. Take it away from the crib, take it away from your kids. Cause you was trying to survive, make a way for your jits. Now you looking at five, look at when you get out. Your daughter, she gon' be nine, and your son gon' be six. You done lost a lot of time, you want back, but can't get. Now you shed tears, this is what it sounds like when thugs cry. Think about the lost ones, looking at the doves fly. You was thugged out, feeling like you need a hug. Now hard times come to everybody in that slum life. Living that slum life, mobbing on the block every day. Paper chasing for money, call they need somewhere to stay. Living that slum life, grinding on the block every day. Paper chasing for money, call they need somewhere to stay. Living that slum life, nigga get shot every day. Paper chasing for money, they call they need somewhere to stay. Living the judge life, he say you won't see another day. Paper chasing for money, call you need somewhere to stay. Living that slum life.
Yes, the only way those flowers will grow when it rains. Soon to be woe time, that's my prediction. Hood legends, be prepared for dealing with ongoing crucifixion. But that's the penalty of leadership. This the position, curse as well as a gift. Yes, being dissected by busters. But for us to rise, we must suffer. Living that slum life.
Let's go to war!
All right. That was Slum Life by C. Reese Idangle. Excuse me. That was Slum Life by C. Reese. You can find him on Instagram at CReeseIdangle740. And it featured One Dog. You can find One Dog on Instagram at One Dog WP83. Correction. You can find him on Instagram at One Dog 83WP. Again, at One Dog 83WP. All right, moving on. I think I last left off on this first tour talking about the first few days after we crossed the border and we entered Iraq. Now, from there, from what I recall, you know, we had to trek about 350 miles or so to get from the border to Baghdad. And there were many Iraqi army units that were stationed in between us and trying to get to that border. So we had assignments to get to where they were and to take them out. And eventually the orders went from taking out the military to taking out police also. And then because they were violating the Geneva Conventions, we were also ordered to take out ambulances, because at one time, under the normal circumstances of the Geneva Convention, you know, we never touch hospitals, ambulances, mosques. But once those were being abused and, you know, the bad guys were using those to shoot at us from, even they became authorized to be fired upon, because there was also the threat of car bombs. You know, the Iraqis were sort of just beginning to break out their whole IED network of and their whole rash of IED attacks that they threw upon us for the next several years. So we hit cities that I can't, we hit so many cities and villages I can't name each and every one to you. I mean, that would take a lot. I would have to sit at a map, sit down on a map. And even then, I told you I was 19, so things were happening so fast that the primary thing I remember is always the clinks of the on the doors, on the tracks, on the Amtraks, on the AAVs, our Marine Amphibious Assault Vehicles. Once that rear ramp comes down to let us out, you always hear that familiar clink, 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 and you hear your fellow guys or the commander of the AV hauling out, you know, ramp coming down so that everyone knows. And then once that ramp's down and you're out, you're hauling ass to go wherever, whenever, you know, pandemonium, chaos, shots fired, explosions dropping here and there, bodies, faces, blood, feces, you know, full-on sandwich of what it's like to go to war. Now, things I do remember, certain instances, seeing Iraqis, hundreds of them, walking down the streets as they were leaving their war-torn cities and passing out yellow humanitarian MREs, meals ready to eat, passing out humanitarian rations to them, passing out water bottles, waving at children. Constantly hearing people tell me things like, you know, hey, Bush good, Saddam down, stuff like that, or tell me how grateful they were that we were removing Saddam from power, that sort of thing, saying, you know, Bush out, I'm sorry, not Bush, but Saddam out, Saddam down, Saddam down. You know, they're thanking us, saying things like that. In the meantime, we were full on, you know, we were knocking down, you know, infantry, mount, SWAT type of ops as far as clearing on the hunt. It was a mix of urban ops where we had to clear, you know, buildings, homes, bathrooms, closets, each and every one, each house, one by one, on the hunt. And then at times, we'd run into units that were dug in for traditional battlefield fighting, man. They were dug into their fighting holes. There were some holes we got to, man, where these motherfuckers even had bags full of cocaine in their fighting holes with them. So they were, you know, hopped up like hell when we came to fight them. I seen some of them take shit, an entire magazine of 223 or 556 ammo, because they were hopped up so much on coke. I don't know what the fuck that was about, but yeah, that's the way they fought, and that's the way they died, so it is what it is. There was one city that we attacked that I remember. You know what? I didn't even mention the fact that the entire time, both Time Magazine, a reporter by the name of Simon, I can't remember his last name now, it's been so many years. There was Simon, his photographer, and then there was a reporter by the name of Jack from the San Francisco Chronicle. They were both embedded within our unit, within our battalion, 3rd Battalion, 4th Marines. And Time Magazine was actually embedded in my platoon, if you can imagine how crazy that was, right? Of all people, of all places, of all times in your life, We have three squads within our platoon, and Time Magazine's attached to Sega Squad, man. How does that work? How weird is that? Each story they transmit or times they interview guys is coming right there, homegrown from your platoon, and being published in magazines worldwide. But anyway, one of the cities we were in ended up in a newspaper speaking about how bad the fighting was that we had to get through. What I remember, I'll fast forward to approaching Baghdad and finally making it to the Diyala River and the Diyala Bridge, which is about 7 miles outside of the heart of Baghdad, from what I remember. Now, we arrived there after the war began on March 21st. We arrived at the Diyala River, you know, pushing and fighting through those 350 miles or so to the border, you know, days no showering, dirty, on the hunt, being shot at, fired at. True warfare, man, frontline shit, you dig? Yeah, we were rolling, and I remember as we approached the Diyala Bridge, there was one day where we hit an army headquarters, all right? And inside that army headquarters, I was able to grab a few, you know, war trophies, war souvenirs. No weapons, no guns, but things, you know, flags, helmets, shit like that. Figured if I did, you know, if I was lucky enough for my dumb ass to become a grandfather or something one day, I would be able to pass things on or show or have heirlooms, you know. Just as you've seen other war veterans do from World War One all the way through Vietnam, the Gulf, and Afghanistan, you bring certain things back to tell a story for you, if you do survive to tell that story. So I do remember once hitting an army headquarters like that and bringing things back that I stowed away in my backpack, which was attached to the AAVs, attached to the tracks. I also was able to stow a helmet, as I said, and got that all the way back home through customs and whatnot, an Iraqi helmet. As well as an Iraqi beret from an individual, Iraqi police patch, arm patch, but also from an individual. Let's see. Okay, so as we approached the Diyala River, one day we were clearing. And I remember we had to blow a line charge in APOP. We had to blow a line charge somewhere to the fact that whichever building or house or city we were in, once we were told that that was about to blow, we seriously had to get away from every window or glass, you know, piece of glass in the house, because the line charge blew so strong that it blew the glass out of every house on several blocks, man. I can't explain to you how powerful that thing was. But, you know, something like that is normally used to clear minefields for us, especially when we're uncertain. We'd rather blow everything that's in that mine area or mine field rather than risk any of us as grunts on the ground having to lose legs, you know, feet, that sort of thing. Or your life, obviously. But one day, we hopped out on foot, still wearing our green NBC suits, nuclear, biological, and chemical suits. And to get to my objective, we all had to jump through some kind of like sewage type of pipe, half sewage pipe. I remember wading through that, like, chest deep, jumping out, all of us jumping out on the other end, you know, watching security. We're walking through high grass, you know, tall grass, because, you know, we're approaching the river, approaching the Diyala River. And as we approach, there are mortars trying to dial in on our position to drop them where we are, but they're dropping in the river or next to the river or near the river, but not specifically on us. Now, as soon as we get out to where they are, they're sort of like a small white sedan that I happen to notice. And I'm carrying my M249, so I immediately lock onto that car and try to engage it in the gas tank. And unfortunately, I wasn't able to get it to blow, but I did get the two drivers and occupants, whom I wasn't sure if they had weapons or not. I thought I saw one in the driver, but either way, they knew we were coming for them, and they hopped out and hauled ass. Eventually, later, we did search their vehicle and find that they did have military uniforms or whatnot that they had changed out of. So, you know, we almost had a match made in heaven, but they took off, didn't really want to be a part of that fight at the time. But we spent the night there along that river. And I can remember my normal fire watch duties. I can remember my CO telling me that we should cut holes in the fence that was behind us, because we happened to have some Iraqi bayonets that we had acquired, as well as Iraqi grenades. And the bayonets, though, they allowed us to cut. They had wire cutters on the back. Or not wire, stronger than wire cutters, but yeah, basically wire cutters, and they were strong enough to cut the Iraqi fences. So we cut, you know, squares or circles into the Iraq fences in case we started to take in too much incoming fire, that we could back up through those fence areas and then regroup and reattack from different areas from there. But we didn't want the fence, you know, impeding any of our movement towards a fight or towards trying to take care of any of our fellow Marines. So I remember spending that night there. I remember one other Marine and I doing something in the middle of the night where we had to walk to maybe pass a message or find someone. And I remember us getting lost. Could never forget that. We got lost. But eventually we did find our platoon, got back to our sleeping sites. We each did our 1 hours of fire watch for the platoon by staying awake while the rest slept. And there was no heavy, heavy enemy activity that first night. But I do know we had an operation going where we were sending Marines across the Diyala Bridge to try to recon it, to try to find out if the Iraqis had rigged it with explosives of any kind. And sure enough, they had blown a hole in the center of the bridge. They blew a hole in it so that we couldn't drive vehicles across it. But the hole was, I guess, short enough in size that if we found the right covers for it, we could still cross on foot. So, and that's also the time when they ran into an individual on the bridge that might have been prior military as well, but who happened to have something strapped on his chest. He had a green military bandolier strapped on his chest underneath his shirt and jacket, and with what I assume was some sort of explosive inside, as we ended up having to take his ass out so that he wouldn't take out our platoon or our company with whatever bullshit he was trying to bring through while he was attempting to cross the bridge with us that night. He's the individual that you see pictured on in that book that I'm in, entitled The War in Iraq, A Photo History, on page 229. The individual that's laying beside me in that book is the individual I'm talking about right now. I did not take his life, but I do know the individuals that had to. And as you can see in the book, he did have the green bandolier strapped underneath his clothes across his chest. And obviously he intended to fuck some of us up with those explosives, so he had to be taken out off-site, off-rip, taken out on-site, excuse me, taken out on-site, off-rip. Now, the very next morning, which happened to be April 7th, 2003, was when we were scheduled to cross the border to get in the Diyala River Bridge so that we could enter Baghdad. Now, that morning, we were all up as we were each morning during Stand-to. And Stand-to in the Marines means it goes all the way back to, the Brits or the Indians, where everyone knows the enemy attacks at dawn. So what do? Before dawn, all men everywhere, every man wakes up within the battalion, all 1,200 of us, and is ready for anything and everything to happen at the crack of dawn. Every man is awake, manning his gun, manning whatever weapon system they're assigned to, and ready for shit to go down. So that's how prepared we are, and that's the way we rock in the Marines. Now, we were up for Stand-to, and shortly after that was over, we gathered in an Iraqi home, gathered in the yard of their home, and we were preparing, making our last minute adjustments, checking gear, checking weapons. One of my buddies, he somehow fell into like a water pit full of water, so he couldn't cross the bridge with us. He ended up leaving the platoon and having to cross with one of the amphibious assault vehicles, later on. But as we sat in that Iraqi yard, out of nowhere, an Iraqi artillery round flew over my head from the other side of the, from the Baghdad side of the bridge, flew over my head, flew maybe, 30 to 50 yards away from me and landed. I looked up and all I heard was shoo, and it exploded, striking one of our AAVs, hitting one of our tracks. It killed two Marines inside instantly. I felt the heat from the ball of the flame that emerged after that explosion. And then immediately things got chaotic and kind of helter-skelter, where we were all, in pandemonium, checking, trying to find out who's hurt, who's not, where the Iraqis were, if they had us dialed in, if someone was watching us and was directing them and telling them exactly where we were. We spread out. We were ordered to spread out, as you do when you're dialed in with indirect fire like that. Especially, like I said, artillery rounds and not just mortar rounds or anything of that nature, smaller. We were dealing with the big shit, and the big shit was fired at us and killed two of our own.
Initially, we thought the damage was much worse than just two Marines, and we were told it was much worse than two Marines. Several of my buddies were named as dead or wounded after that artillery round struck. And I'll admit, that was probably one of only three times where I was truly terrified, because I didn't know, just like any other Marine, where that indirect fire would land. You had no motherfucking clue, man. You hear it dropping, you see it dropping. You look up in the sky and you just wonder where it's gonna dry next, where it's gonna drop next. Excuse me. Probably one of the most helpless positions a Marine can find themselves in, even if they are carrying 1,000 rounds and an M249 assault against indirect fire, man, against artillery, mortars, airplanes dropping on you. Shit can get hectic for a grunt. That's as real as I can put it. Anyway, a short while later, my sergeant major for 3rd Battalion, 4th Marines, he came out And he let us know we were still going to cross that motherfucking bridge regardless. All right, they weren't going to stop our show. They weren't going to stop our shine. We were going to cross that bridge to enter Baghdad regardless. And that's on everything. They told us we had about 30 minutes to get our shit together and that we were going to move. Sure enough, 30 minutes later, we made plans and crossed. Now, it was not a simple cross. Remember I told you, Iraqis blew a hole in the bridge. They blew a hole in the bridge that was too big for a vehicle to be able to drive across. But we were individually able to find the combat engineers. If you've ever seen the magazine article that features Marine combat engineers yelling at us, it's used a lot to represent the Iraq war. But the combat engineers were actually yelling at us to hurry up to bring planks that they'd found on the ground to cover the hole on the ground so that the rest of the company could cross on foot. And that is what my job was during that initial phase of the crossing. My job was to run with planks with the rest of the members of 1st Platoon, 3rd Squad, and bring planks up, cover that hole, and turn around, go get more planks. So I actually ended up crossing that bridge twice. I ran once, dropped off the planks I had, ran back, picked up more planks, and that's when you see me in that book during the war. The book picture where I'm next to the dead Iraqi body is actually when I was coming, is actually after I'd already dropped off one of the metal planks and I was coming back for my second one. That's when that picture was taken by the photojournalist that happened to catch me there and published that in the book, The Iraq War Photo History, on page 229. So after that second trip of covering the hole with metal planks that we were ordered to find, we proceeded across the rest of the bridge and got into the first available building that we could see that we could. That was tall enough that offered a great vantage point. We got in, we took over that building, and somehow, some way, that building caught on fire. And all I remember is running throughout the house from the first floor to the roof to let the guys on the roof know that the house is on fire and that they need to get down as soon as possible. And that's what I did. So everyone left that house. We egressed, found another safe spot, and set up security again on the other side of that bridge so that the rest of our company and eventually our battalion, 3-4, 3rd Battalion, 4th Marines, Kilo Company, could cross the bridge. Now, I was later told, that a pontoon bridge was actually put up and built on the Diyala River so that we could get our vehicles, our tracks, our tanks, the AVs and whatnot, our Humvees across, since that bridge had been so badly blown by the Iraqis. But I am proud to tell you that I am part of one of the first waves of Marines to cross that Diyala Bridge and to enter Baghdad and to proceed from there to eventually us pulling out Saddam's statue in the middle of the city. We'll take a break here. Bring you into another song from Sarge's playlist. Once again, this is C. Reese with his song, Forever My Peeps.
Forever you my nigga though. Had a show, you was spreading with my nephew. Shit hit the fan, still you came to the her name Capella. Pump head sometimes, don't see eye to eye. But she quick to lift me up when I'm down and out. Hey, we a hell of a team, and when I get it, get you everything you ever could dream. Yo, just take care of my nephew and niece. Be the best mother that you could be, and I'ma take it to the peak. Till the day a nigga leave, you forever with peace. Just be the best mother you could be, yo. Till the day a nigga leave, you forever with peace. Just be the best mother you could be. My nigga, go, go. I love the love, and I love y'all just like they mine, nigga. That's why I tell you, boy, hey, ain't nothing. If I got it, any one of y'all got it, nigga, and that's real motherfucking love, boy. Six.
All right, that was C. Reese. You can find him on Instagram at C. Reese I Dangle 740 with his song Forever My Peeps. This has been the War Dog Trail, episode 17. We've been discussing the remainder of my first Iraq tour. Before the break, I told you about us finally crossing the bridge, making it into the first house on the other side of the bridge into Baghdad, which was a bad choice, I suppose, because somehow the house caught on fire. After we relocated and took up security positions, we ended up laying in the prone, man, just waiting and watching as the rest of the battalion and the rest of our reinforcements crossed. I ended up laying in a prone on my stomach with my gun, with that M249, for the next, I don't know, man, 4 to 6 hours as we waited. And then we fell asleep right there in place, across from the bridge. Now, that night, we ended up with pretty minimal activity, I'll say. Very minimal activity. Most of the houses that we laid on had been burned down to pieces, especially from the Willie Pete bombs from the white phosphorus that had been dropped. The houses were decimated to ashes, some of them. I mean, I laid down on a few areas where there were houses, and I look at my down at my vest and just blow off the dust of what used to be a building right there on my chest. I mean, that's how crazy it was. Now, that next day, the very next day, as we were again online, just a little north, or excuse me, just a little past the bridge of the Diyala Bridge and working our way into Baghdad, that we had to start setting up roadblocks. And we set up a roadblock, some vehicles to be stopped so that they couldn't, you know, run into us with car bombs. Because there were more and more reports beginning to come across the country about suicide bombers. So, during one particular incident, a vehicle approached, happened to be a van, an old school van, similar to like the double punch bug looking van from the early 80s. The van approached. The warning shot was given, a second shot to the grill of the car was given, but the vehicle still wouldn't stop, and they proceeded. So my 0331 machine gunners, they ripped into the vehicle in order to get it to stop. And somehow, some way, after everyone in the vehicle had been taken out, the very next morning, a woman opened the door to that van and crawled out. And we have footage of it. It was captured by Time Magazine, by Simon and his photographer and all. But that was a crazy sight to know that she stayed in that van all night long with the bodies of her dead family members. And we tried our best with our interpreter to let her know, you know, that we apologized, but we told them to stop, you know. We needed them to stop because it's a very dangerous situation. You're in the middle of a war zone and you're approaching us. And if it comes down to you versus us, well, it's going to be you. Your ass every time. But, that was probably one of the first incidents where I saw an E2 PFC shot at an E5, a sergeant, private first class shot at a sergeant to stop firing at the vehicle to get him to hold his fire and restrain himself. Because the entire line of 31s of machine gunners, they opened up with their 240 Gulf, their M240 Gulfs. M240G. G is the letter in the military alphabet for the word Gulf. So they opened up with the M240 Gulfs like never before on several vehicles that approached. But don't get me wrong, this wasn't like any type of abuse. We have an escalation of force and rules of engagement where, like I said, we fire warning shots in the sky first, we'll fire warning shot at the ground in front of the vehicle, then we'll fire at the grill of the vehicle to try to stop the engine block. And not until after all those steps, we find us ready and prepared to take out the driver. And in which case, you know, if we have to, we do. We're gonna end things here for this episode. We've already covered a lot of information, a lot of movement throughout the first tour of the war. En route to Baghdad, us finally crossing the bridge to enter Baghdad. I'll leave you one final song from Sergeant's playlist. Again, it's my boy C-Reese, this time featuring Low Key with the song Good Time. Enjoy.
Okay. Man. Damn, nigga, bro, call all right. Hello.
What's up, bro?
What's up, nigga?
Hey,
you finna dangle, bitch.
What up, bitch?
Man, bring some motherfucking lip through. Now, the motherfucking meat on the grill, nigga. We out here hanging and swinging, nigga.
Man, we all over
there. Hey, peas in the car, nigga.
Hey,
yo. Hey, we can have a good time. Hey, we can have a good time. We can have a good time.
good. Hey, how you want to be? TGI up, shots on me. Another work week in the book. Gone cheap. What's a Drake? Get a double of B. On me. Salute the fact we're making the bet. On G. Where the barbecue at? When I'm on that loud, man, I be hungry hell. I'm a stoner for real. Real talk, man, I might just bend a corner for chill. But never mind that. Gotta keep my eye where the prize at. Friday afternoon, trying to find me in the line pack. Had the crab shack, snow crab leg. For the niggas snatch your pants, what you know about that? Yo, time to buy, started off with a dollar shop. Mommy crossed town, gave the boo where the dollar's at. Yo, my two-step game up, you know the thing are hard, and you can't hang, bro.
Hey, we can have a good time.
Throwing the wind, then swimsuit by the pool, showing some skin. Yo, such a beautiful day. I'm just admiring the view. Why is you in the way? Phone line down, holler back some other time. Out to cool or not, enjoying the summertime. Sunshine State, feeling good, feeling great. T-Lo is doing the thing, I might need another break. Oh, yeah, getting loud with my big cut track. Turn to the max, man, we finna go ham. Yo, where the after hours spot, cutting the power up. We just out here vibing, ride around, trying to find some. Can't blame us, we know the dang hard and you can't hang, bro.
Hey, we can have a good time.
And all just a close, man. I'm in my zone, feeling myself when the drunk kids say your boy known the two-step. Sticky baby, bop Wu-Tang with the balls. Then I watch you drop. We're open like a yellow out of there. Yeah, we pop. Temple tell the head said, baby, mama tell your pops okay. Everything's sweet right now with the seed. Jicking hope so much, I can feel it in my knees. Yep, man, shout out to all the DJs. I'm going crazy, yeah, put this bitch on replay.
Hey, hey, we can have a good time.
This is the War Dog Trail. This has been episode 17. I hope you enjoyed my tales of war with your boy, Sergeant War Dog. Salute.
All I know is war. All I know is shoot. All I want is more. But I got some things to do. I'm a dog of war. Hell's what I've been through. I'm a dog of war. I did it all for you.
DB Radio. Okay, listen up. Before we start this, understand what it is. The Spartan Pledge is a battle drill. It's what to do when you don't know what to do. Remember that.
I will be the last to fall.
Two things every warfighter needs.
I won't shed a tear for them to see.
Is a battle buddy and a mission. Repeat after me. I will not take my own life by my own hand.
I will not take my own life by my own hand.
Until I talk to my battle buddy first.
Until I talk to my battle buddy first.
My mission is to find a mission. To help my warfighter family. Thank you. You've now taken the Spartan Pledge. Don't let it die here. You are now authorized to go and tell other people, other warfighters. You don't take it for yourself, you take it for them. It's an agreement so they know where to go when they're having problems. Take this, go give it to others. All the way. Make it happen. Go give it to others. Make it happen.
DB Radio.